is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Okay, next up, it's Eyes Wide Open. Let's bring Janessa on to reintroduce herself, her show, her guest, and what's up for today. Welcome back.
Thanks, Nicole, and welcome to Eyes Wide Open. We are multifaceted beings living in a multidimensional existence, and we hold the power of perception. This power alone paints our reality. Perception influences the things we see and the things we don't see. Together, we'll explore the mystical and the material, the metaphysical and the physical, the supernatural and the concrete, the seen and the unseen. I'm your host, Janessa Finley Ford. I'm an empowerment coach who helps clients change their obstacles to outcomes, their setbacks to successes, their trials to triumphs, all while mastering the art of being human. And before I introduce our guest really quick, I want to just set the stage for how we came to here in this moment, talking about this topic of spiritual equity. So a couple months ago, we walked through the series around the different systems that we all live in that are a part of our world, and talked about the monetary system particularly, and the spiritual component to credit and debt. And just yesterday, I was at a group, and there was a woman talking about social media and watching the reels and the shorts on YouTube and TikTok and getting caught up in all of the realities of the world and the poisoning and the food and the water and, oh my gosh, the doom and the gloom and the overwhelm and the panic and the fear, and took all the social media platforms off of her phone. So a big part of my purpose and message here is to rise above the fear. Knowledge is power, and yes, it can trigger fear. But we as beings have the ability to be empowered, to know more, and then do more. And that is what our guest, Rebecca, is going to help deliver for us here today. We're going to make a greater light and sense of the monetary system, the judicial system, some of the systems that we get caught up in through this principle of spiritual equity. So without further ado, Rebecca is her life theme is justice. She is led by a strong desire to inspire her peers and create the environment for self-empowerment through greater connection to spirit. Her life's work has centered around the purifying of mind, body, and spirit through modalities such as detox and regeneration, meditation, yoga, energetic healing, and the law. Rebecca is an active advocate for freedom and thrives in sharing the power of knowledge and application to manifest a harmonious world for all. Rebecca is now part of a team of like-minded people who carry the same purpose forward of helping our fellow brothers and sisters to be released of bondage and establishing the full value of life through equality. So incredibly powerful, and I was lucky enough to connect with Rebecca after releasing the previous series that I talked about. So I love talking about the little nudges and signs that we see in life and how things unfold. And so without further ado, as I mentioned, Rebecca, welcome. Thank you for being here. And please share with us a story about yourself so we can all get to know you a little bit more before we dive into this topic.
Thank you so much, Janessa, for having me. And it's so wonderful to be a part of your community and the things that you're doing, because you're such a powerhouse, and it's been so lovely to connect with you and to have you part of our course and to learning what we're learning and doing so that we can benefit the rest of the world. So yeah, you know, it was interesting, Janessa, when you asked me to come up with a funny story, it really reminded me how serious my life has become since about my teenage years. And it's funny because one of the main things in my life, I always said I never wanted to grow up, you know, because adults always seem so boring because they're so caught up in their limitations and all the boxes of life. and here I am trying to struggle for a funny story. So luckily I have one. When I was in my teens, I tend to be a little bit of a daredevil. Me and my best friend, we like to do a lot of things out into the public, things that, you know, triggered people, or it wasn't because we wanted to trigger people. It was just because we were having fun. And I used to work at a grocery store. And at the time when I was working there, I was really addicted to the energy drinks, Monsters. And so I would always have to go there to, and it was like the closest store to us, so I'd always have to go there to pick up the Monsters. And I really wanted one, but I really didn't want to go back into work as being seen as me, you know, I don't know what my problem was. But me and my best friend, we decided to dress up. And so we both wore Hawaiian skirts. We stuffed our bellies with pillows, and we wore Halloween masks over our faces. And we decided to go to the store like that to see what would happen. And it was funny because as we started to walk in, you know, we have a lot of eyes on us. Like one of my managers specifically was watching me, not knowing who I was, you know, just completely his mouth open, so concerned with there's two people with masks going into the store. And it took us a while to kind of get out of there because we couldn't stop laughing. You know, I think at one point I almost peed myself. You know, I had to stay there for a couple of seconds just to hold it. And we tried to get up to the counter to pay for the Monsters, and they wouldn't let us pay for it. They said that we had to show our faces, our entire faces, until we could actually pay for the Monster, and we weren't about to do that. So, you know, I ended up leaving the store without being able to buy what I wanted to buy. But I thought it was kind of funny because it was completely opposite from the respects of what we get now, you know, during these days with all the mask mandates. So it was a pretty, you had to be there in order to see it, you know, to have a good laugh at it, but it was pretty ridiculous. My mom still remembers that story. Yeah.
I love tying it back into the mask mandates in current day. Isn't it interesting how there's two sides to every coin and here we are?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, yeah.
Tell us about your background. How did you get from the Monster mask in a store as a teen to justice and detox or generation, meditation, energetics, the law? Like these, I can understand why you say as an adult, your life is serious. Those are some serious topics. What is your journey that got you from youth to here?
Good question. You know, I say this in a funny way, but I was fortunate to grow up in a family that was pretty messed up. And the reason why I say fortunate is because I'm a very firm believer and knower that out of any challenge that we receive, we can turn it into something that's actually the gift for us that we were wanting the whole entire time. And at the age of about 15, 16, I started getting into Eckhart Tolle and presence and understanding how the law of attraction worked. And the reason why was because I was so justice-oriented, and people all the time were telling me how I should be, how I should look, how my life was going to be as I get older if I didn't follow A, B, and C, and D, then these things were going to happen. And I just felt that was wrong. And so I spent a lot of time with the spiritual books such as Eckhart and also Miss Hicks, Esther Hicks. I spent a lot of time listening to her just to help me redirect and find the grounding that I needed in order to reassert myself into the reality that I really did want. And what started to appear was as I became really good at meditation, I started to detach more from the world, from the outer world. So it became really easy for me to channel, but also to feel spirit and to see all the goodness and all the love there was, and to move beyond the challenges that were being faced with. And so I was in college. I went to the University of Arizona, and I studied anthropology because it was the only, topic that I could study that wasn't going to brainwash me enough to indoctrinate me, but it still did. I had to work a lot to get out of the mental spaces, you know, that I became a part of. But as I went to college, I got hired for a job, you know, 401k job, you know, 40 hours a week plus, you know, on the salary. And at the time, you know, everybody in my environment was like, yeah, that's a really positive thing. You go, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then I started learning some things about my company that I didn't agree with and realizing that what I was standing for wasn't really right. And so I took it upon myself to leave it and to go further into truth. And I ended up finding all these revelational things that were, you know, that we're hearing all about now, like chemtrails, also about, you know, the United States and how it's built, the birth certificates and all that stuff. And it really, thank God for yoga and for meditation, because that really kept me grounded. But I know that I stirred with a lot of passion, specifically a lot of anger about what was going on. And the fact, you know, anytime when I would talk about it with any of my peers, even my friends, they would shoot me down. They didn't want to hear it. It was like I was crazy. And so I just kept eventually pushing to where the fact, like, even though I felt like I was by myself and alone and nobody knew that down was up and up was down, that eventually if I kept doing the same transmutation practice that I had learned at a younger age, that I would find the solution. And I kept running into different groups that offer different remedies for sovereignty, and they were really helpful because, you know, we stand on the backs of on the shoulders of giants, and one thing led to another. And it was interesting because when I was at a block, I didn't know what to do anymore in sovereignty because the things that I were doing wasn't working, and I could see people around me getting arrested for doing the things that I was going to do. I went to Peru for a women's retreat for 2 weeks, and I got a lot of downloads, you know, a lot of clarity. But one of the things that I really went there with was wanting to have the next steps for sovereignty. And I didn't receive anything during that trip, but after that trip, I ran into the man who, you know, owns another program, who led me to the gentleman that I am working with now to provide solutions and remedies to those who are in contractual obligations that can't seem to get themselves out because they don't know how to be seen as a woman or a man versus a citizen or a corporate entity that belongs to another corporate entity. So it became down to that, and eventually, as you know, Will, I started working with Will to learn the process, to master it. You know, I'm still always growing my knowledge base, but it really became prominent that this information isn't so readily available because, you know, what I found is that everybody has an agenda. Everybody, even when you think that they're, you know, trying to do good, if they're not truly aligned to spirit, they're not truly aligned to this is the purpose of God's will, and they're out to feed themselves and their own, you know, paradigm or kingdom, then often you're going to find falsehoods. And so, you know, me being me, I just can't align to falsehoods. So eventually it became where I was forced to do a course to where we provide the equity remedy, you know, and not with all these other agendas attached. Our agenda is to really grow leaders who are knowledgeable. Because right now, especially right now with everything that's going on, you know, people can't tell the difference of what's correct and what's not correct, and they don't even carry the lexicon to know the difference. So one of the biggest things that we focus on is language. So that's basically how, long-winded story, came all the way to this point.
No, I love it. Thank you for sharing all of that. I love many points that you made. I often find myself guiding clients to that, you know, we're right side up in an inverted world when you're talking about like up is down and down is up. And so there's, of course, so many things that you and I haven't actually spoken about between the two of us that are certainly in alignment to the message here and the things that I talk about. So I love that reinforcement. A quick follow-up question before we move on. You referenced contracts that people can't get out of. To make that just a little bit more tangible in the physical sense of our world, what type of contracts would you be referring to?
Yeah, so I just want to start off with saying contracts supersede the law. So if you have a contract with an individual or a corporation and they have all these lists of policies and maybe even some of them are against the law or against the statutes, you're binded by that obligation as soon as you sign on them. So an obligation could be a mortgage. An obligation could be a credit card. It could be a car loan. It could be a license. you know, pretty much anything that has to do with putting your information down on paper and receiving some form of receipt of that. So that creates an obligation in a contract. Is that clear enough?
Yeah. Okay. I love that. Thank you. So I know several, lots of our listeners out there are really new to this topic. So I might continue to bring in some questions just to refine and bring it to the very basics. So with that, I think the next great question to speak on is, what is spiritual equity?
Yeah, it's a really great question. It's something I had no idea even existed until recently because of my own journey, you know, and I'm sure you're finding the same thing, Janessa. Equity is about life. You know, where does all the resource and value come from? And that's what equity is. It comes from the source of life, you know, from the ground up, from our breath, from our blood, from the water. That's true equity. And spiritual equity is being able to be aligned with the natural laws, you know, that govern this world, to be able to redeem yourself from all of the mistakes from contracting with the world of the death, which is the world of debt. Death, debt, kind of the same thing. So that's how I kind of see spiritual equity. Yeah. That's kind of how I see spiritual equity. I see it as, you know, this whole process of equity, it does, what I find is that the law, the legal law, is the usage of law, and the law all stems from natural law, which then formed into common law, you know, amongst the common agreements between people. And through that process, we see that, you know, all, I'm not a religious person. I never, you know, really was into the church, but then I found out that the Bible is really necessary to understand in order to really get a good handle about what equity is, because we are returning ourselves back to where we belong. And it's a pretty profound thing, especially for this time, because it's right on time, I feel. And it's showing up because it's the choosing factor for people to decide which way they're going to go. Are they going to go towards nature's law, back to source, or are they going to turn to the mechanical world, you know, belonging to the military, and indebting themselves into that. So in order to find yourself back into, you know, spiritual equity, you have to come into your own alignment with your own source. You know, we always say that we can't teach atheists, because in order for you to have true remedy, you really have to know where you belong in order to leave where you are.
So good. And I feel like that's a great explanation in simplistic terms. They always say, in some of the past master classes that I've done, that the level of mastering of a topic is how simplified can you share its concept. Thank you for bringing that into such simplistic terms, because if people out there have dove into this topic at all on their own, you're going to find a lot of people who are going to talk about it in really complex ways. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, and you can tell what the complexity does. Everything about source is simple. It's nothing's complicated. Once we make it complicated, that's all mind and that's all extra. You know, it's not the truth. So I just wanted to say that.
I appreciate that. That's suppression, right? Like, the suppression is what clouds the mind and makes things complex, and then you can't see the truth and you can't break it down to understand it and to use it. And so it's just a strategy that's used within energetics of suppressing the truth and the things that will truly move us forward.
Totally. I totally see it as a consequence of being in a cage. We just go out of our minds, go crazy.
Yeah, that's a very, very real analogy.
Yeah.
The prison we create in our minds, being caged as people, but usually it's what we've created for ourselves by lack of knowledge or lack of understanding.
Yes.
Which is something. Let's talk about the difference between public and private and what that means.
Yeah. You know, whenever I think about privacy, I always think about the Privacy Act of 1974. And it's a pretty long read, you know, but I recommend anybody go to that Privacy Act because it really puts us on notice that any company, any corporation, anybody can take our information, anything that we put out there, and use it. And they can sell it or they can use it against us. And the Privacy Act allows us to be informed of that and to know that there's ways to avoid that from happening. So I just wanted to cover that a little bit. And one of the ways just to inform is whenever you're signing something, you know, making sure that you always reserve your rights without prejudice. It's very important, otherwise, that you've already consented to them being able to use your information however it is that you'd like. So privacy, it's really interesting. If you talk to, I mean, I have a lot of friends that are in their 70s, you know, so I'm familiar with the mentality structure versus, you know, my niece and nephews who are in their teens, you know. And what's phenomenal is the difference in how they see their information and where it goes. So, you know, a lot of people in their 70s are very particular about their information, how where it goes online, the things that they put out there about themselves, because there was a certain, you know, understanding that privacy is for your own benefit, and privacy is about taking everything that belongs to you into your own home, into your own community, and keeping it there and not allowing it to be used for any nefarious reason. Because these days, we don't believe that, you know, there's a consensus that goes around that people are just starting to wake up to that they're invaluable, you know, that they're not really worth anything except for maybe a couple dollars an hour or maybe $20 an hour, you know. We set our value to that. So we don't really understand that our energy, everything that we put energy to, actually, you know, creates more things out there, more energetic ties. You know, information is considered to be a charge, and a charge can be used against you. That's why police officers, they say, you know, anything that you do say or will say will be used against you in court, you know, so that's why you keep your mouth shut. And so what I find interesting is that nowadays, you know, we have a whole society of thinking that in order for us to be valuable, we have to put all of ourselves out there. We have to, you know, share about our weight, share about our pretty faces, our ugly face, whatever. You know, it's just Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you know, all of those kinds of ways that people put charge into something that doesn't even belong to them. People don't own Facebook, you know, and they're giving all this information to Facebook. And it's their private information. And that eventually can be used against them because we don't know what the agenda is of those who are on the top. We're just starting to see it. We're just starting to see it come out, you know. It's just starting to become obvious. So we recognize that over the years, it's been privacy has been trampled on in the effort of business, because nowadays, in order to be a successful business owner, which is all just commercial paper, all based off of debt notes and usufruct, just borrowing from the estate, you have to market yourself, you know. So it's really interesting to see about those difference in mentalities over the years and how that's happened and then where we're at right now because of all of our choices to put all of our information out there and how they can use it against us today, you know, quotation marks. And public, you know, public versus private, when we're talking about the law, we're talking about a capacity to contract. So your capacity defines how you can buy and sell goods within any commercial realm. If your capacity is that of a, say hypothetically, a belligerent citizen, a part of a bankrupt estate, and you're borrowing against a legal right to be there to use commerce, then your capacity to contract is strictly all going to be in the public. That means, you know, when you take a civil litigation into court, everything's in the public, you know. So our what we really, especially like I know right now, like being on a radio show is being pretty public, and I do reserve all my rights with explicit reservation without prejudice. But I think that it's important, you know, just to put myself a little bit out there, just to get people to see the train of thought in order to come back out of the public realm and into the private realm where you can now truly commune with your source, you know. And
Well, while we're talking about just how public this radio show is, I do want to encourage the listeners, no matter what country you're in, to lean in and to get curious about this topic, because this isn't just for United States law.
No.
So I just want to throw that out there. A couple follow-up questions from what you just shared. Talk about usufruct. It's a word that is really popular in the sovereignty, and I don't really love using the sovereignty word as a description for the space of becoming, you know, a full being, spiritual, physical, but I think that a lot of our listeners probably haven't heard that word before. So talk to us about what that is.
It is usury. So we're talking about this both on the spiritual and material level, right? So this is also the physical contract represents the spiritual aspects as well. If you think about your own sovereignty, what are you doing? You're gaining all of your energy back and integrating that into that one moment in order to receive that full being of who you are, right? And when you do that, you're self-reliant, self-sufficient, and you're not borrowing from the energy of others, right? In the world of sovereignty, usufruct is the usury of basically of monetized estates, you know, that had been hypothecated against, and where the value of the living being and the event of their birth is used to, you know, create the currency that is used to, you know, buy the food, you know, go to Lowe's and buy yourself a new front yard fence, you know. It's all based off of usury of the original state, which gives the United States or any other country that is incorporated under the Roman Catholic, the Vatican, the City of London, gives them the ability to, we borrow it against the estate from which gives it the corporate structure, the power and the ability to exist. So we, having agreed with the original contracts, created a value, and that value was then borrowed and then sold off and then sold off again and then sold off again. And then we are required to use social security numbers because we're borrowing. And according to trust law, indemnity law, you know, if the beneficiary were to come back to claim the estate, which belongs to them, then everything has to be returned. So there has to be an insurance on everything that we borrow. So what our society is growing off of is basically borrowing debt notes, which is an obligation for debt notes, and exchanging our livelihoods for those debt notes, and then to pay another corporation that we've already indebted with those debt notes, even though we don't owe the debt. We are just obliged to pay because we're the ones that gave the credit in the first place. I know it can be a little bit confusing, but you can chime in there to help me make it very clear if it's not clear.
Yeah, this is really where we're getting into the inversion of the reality. I have talked about on a past radio show how the Federal Reserve was set up and how we as living beings are business entities, and a little bit about the concept of the trust and how that's very backward with when we take out a loan, being the creditor and the debtor, and it's all upside down and backward. But
yeah,
for those that did not listen to that, please go ahead and finish your thought. I have another follow-up question.
Okay, on the Securities Exchange Act, which was first formed in 1933, which is when the Emergency War Act went into place. That means the United States, specifically the people of the United States, didn't have any lawful means of paying for any debts because they were forced to give up their gold in order to receive the benefits and privileges of being a citizen. So basically, it tricks them into being bankrupt and to being obliged to that of the United States. But the Securities Exchange Act, it shows, I mean, if anybody has the ability or the time to read it, it says right in there that the nation's credit is founded upon the liens of both personal and real property. So the mortgages that are set upon the nation's houses and land, that's all paying for everything that we're doing. The liens upon the birth certificates and the social security numbers and all the other applications which become securities are all the nation's credit. So the banks are really there as the passing agency to be able to balance that credit and debit side, because that's what we're using in order to make our economy, continue. And so really the banks are there to offset the ledger, you know, offset the debt, not to they have the ability to, because, you know, the system allows it and we don't, you know, the people don't know any better. But now they can take that debt and resell it off, and then we are still the one that's required to pay for it, even though that the system is set up where the nation's credit already paid for everything, you know. And our job is to do what a citizen or what anybody who's part of a bankrupt a nation is to do, is to discharge, because you cannot lawfully pay for any of your own debts in a bankrupt nation. And this is pretty much, you know, the United States has its hands and fingers in all sorts of different countries. So a lot of countries, Commonwealth countries, operate the same way. They just have different forms of timelines of events in history that allowed it to be set up that way.
Right. I know when we've talked before, I think, if I'm putting you on the spot, we'll talk about something else. No pressure to answer this. But I think you have it memorized of the chain, because you mentioned the Catholic Church and the structure of the monetary system. Would you like to walk us through that, or would you like to move on to another topic?
Yeah, I can do a vague representation of it. You know, back in the early 1300s, historically, there was a papal bull. There were three papal bulls that were put into place by the Pope of the Vatican Church. And they were declarations which claimed the lives and souls and the lands of the entire planet. And then over time, that church was able to succeed at taking over different countries, first beginning with Spain, having formed with the king, and then over time having colonized all the other places. And so, specifically in the city of London is the first corporation underneath the Vatican, which is also ruled by the queen. And then every other corporation underneath that is underneath the city of London. So that includes Canada, you know, that includes Australia. And so there's that aspect. And then it comes down to specifically with the states is how it is a charter underneath that corporate entity, as well as under the Vatican forming those doctrinations and creating a state that had their own charter, right, which say like the Utah state, and then eventually being able to have people show up and depositing their own events into that state, because it's set up as a trust to be a depository, to eventually to where it the legal right, because in a trust, the beneficiary, once they put something into a trust, the beneficiary receives the equitable title and the trustee receives the legal title, has the legal right to it. So the state has all the legal right to everything that's ever been put into trust by the parents. And so that legal right is sold off, right, which has been pulled off to the military, and that military is therefore operating business against the treasury, which is basically how whenever we sign something, we're just dealing against the treasury, and the United States becomes indebted to that. Does that make sense?
It does. And at the basis of all of this, if listeners take nothing else away from this, which we talked about in the past episode too, the countries our businesses, our states, our businesses. We as people have been turned into business entities. Everything in the world around us is business.
Yes. So, the birth certificate specifically, it's a registrant, which means it's a registered organization. So yes, you carry around a registered organization. And in Janessa, you're right. We've been completely indoctrinated to believe that we're supposed to think and act like businesses rather than living human beings that operate according to what life says, not what death says.
Exactly. All right. Well, this question, I feel like you made clear if we read between the lines, but I think it's too important to not land solidly on. And so I would love for you to talk about the importance of peace as an aspect of our spiritual equity and the remedies that we seek, because there is different tones in the communities out there trying to create the same outcome, using very different methods to get there. And this is the first community, maybe not the only, but certainly there are few in number, the first community that I came upon that centered the approach on peace. And so I'd love for you to share why that's so important, the alignment with that within the process and our obviously the spirituality of all of this, because I think that's going to beat a dead horse here and tell him 16 times how important this is. It's important, guys.
It is important. Yeah. You're smart to go over this one. You know, I'm sure you know, Janessa, you can, when you go into your meditation space, you go in and find that peace, right? I call it a soft spot. And a soft spot, you know, I get a lot of love. If I'm there and I consistently be there and I'm engaging with people, there's nothing that anybody can say to take me off of where I'm at. You know, I'm completely grounded into that love. And then through that love and peace, I'm able to transmute any challenges or anything that come up even around me, even for other people. And I've seen it. It's pretty amazing. So I knew that within my own journey, that was the way things were, that in order for you to solve a problem, you have to come from a place of surrender and you have to receive the pain and turn it into that consciousness through whatever conscious tool that you want to use. So that was pretty obvious to me. But what wasn't obvious was when I was first getting into the law, and just like you, Janessa, is like, yeah, you're right, there's not very many communities out there, especially in the law groups. You know, there's lots of protests, which is rightfully so. You know, a lot of people are upset based on what things are going on, which I totally understand why. But something that we say is that the facts do not matter. So...
They're on the moon.
Yes, the facts are on the moon. If you, as a spiritual, say you found your source, you know, and you're operating the peace, and then you run into some kind of litigation, so maybe tax, maybe the IRS is coming after you, I don't know, or CRA, and it makes you really upset because you know that you're not supposed to pay that tax, or maybe you already own your property and you're being forced to pay property tax, you know. How does that align with your own spiritual practice of being at peace, right? That never made sense to me. It never made sense up until I found equity. Because like I said, the commercial world, it uses the law. So it's just an extension of the law, and it creates smaller boxes for it, you know. So equity, by having equity and remaining equity, showing equity, having clean hands and then showing up with clean hands, then that's how you receive the remedy out of the commerce world, because equity always exists in commercial terms, and equity is always about going to the root of what the value is, you know, what are the agreements, what's on the record. So right now specifically, a lot of people are really upset with what's going on in the world, but it would be hard for us to believe that we've allowed all of it to happen, that we've completely consented every single way. And because part of the law, they have to put us on notice whenever they want something to happen, and they don't want to take the karmic aspect of that, of forcing us to do something we don't want to do, right? We have to consent. And so it happens through the film industry. It happens through the newspapers. They slowly start to insert little things that they're going to do because they need us to consciously or subconsciously agree with that, right? And so we come to this point where all this oppression is happening, and we think that the only way to help it is by going against it. But that's exactly how it was created in the first place, because if you think about war, war is all based off of killing, bloodshed, and borrowing, you know? If the people's mentality matched that of being in war, then they're all operating according to war standards, which is in the Hague, you know, the Conventions of Hague Treaty, the Treaty Hague. It establishes all the rules for nations who are under war and those who are operating in peace, because in peace, you're entitled to your full equity. You're entitled to everything that belongs to you, because you are back to your original source of value, which is what God gave to you. God stewarded this land to you. God stewarded the child to you in order for you to, take care of that until you pass on for the next generations to come. We're in trust with God already. And so if we know spiritually that in order to truly feel that love, you know, we have to operate in peace, or that's how we find healing, then we have to find that parallel that operates in the law like that, in which there is, and it's equity redemption. So it's a way to be in defense all day long without actually having to be on defense. So it's pretty powerful.
It's very powerful. And it also, I think we're going to tie in a whole bunch of topics really quick together of what we talked about here. So I've talked about the past episodes we talked about with the systems, and then we went through a series about the universal laws or the laws of nature, which Rebecca highlighted in the very beginning, why it's important to be aligned with natural laws. And so coming into this peace-war dynamic, we see the polarized energy, and it is our natural reflex, our egoic programming, when we find something that we really don't like and we see that it's doing harm to us and so many people around us, to be reactive, to want to fight it or protest against it. And by stepping into that energy from an energetic standpoint, you're actually feeding the same beast. You're just doing it in a different manner. And so we have to align ourselves with the natural laws. And that's what this is all about, is being in alignment with that which we are, which is nature. And so we have to bring in the opposing, the polarized energy, which is peace, to really truly create a lasting impact. Like, we're not going to war against it, fight against it, protest against it, and truly have a ripple effect through society that is going to result in something positive when we're coming at it from a negative response. And by negative, I'm not talking right or wrong. Again, I'm talking about the energetics, the polarization of it, the positive, the negative. So if we're living in the negative and we're bringing more negative into a negative situation, we never tip the scale over to positive. And all of that is our natural laws.
Yeah. And there's a saying is let the dead tend to the dead. You're a living being. Why should you argue with that of the dead to let them know who you are? You just have to take the position of who you are in order for them to finally take a seat, you know? And up to this point right now, because there's so many public officials that are totally indoctrinated into that belief that you're just talking about, Janessa, it's pretty profound to see that, if we're not careful about the things that we're listening to, or that the things that we believe, that there's some savior outside of ourselves, then that's exactly how they get us into a cage, is through that fear and that anger, because that's where they live. You know, that's where the world of death is. It completely operates in the things that don't exist. And if you don't want those things that don't exist to exist anymore, stop giving it charge. Stop giving it energy, you know?
I do know. And I hope so many more people will follow suit and step into their power, which is not giving it energy. And I know that it seems so bizarre and also not completely effective if by not giving it energy, we step into do nothing. Which was my approach for many years, was I'm not going to participate in it. That feels way out of alignment for me. But I didn't know the path. I didn't see what was action that would yield a positive result. And so that was a big motivation for me to bring Rebecca on here and to talk about this, because it's not talked about enough, especially from this approach, because it really could have a massive wave and ripple for all of humanity in a really positive way.
Totally. And I just want to say one thing to that, because, you know, I'm working with people all the time. And I would say about 50% of the time people are dealing with problems that have to do with the corporate structures, but the other 50% of the time it's people within their own community, within their own wants to be families. And in order for us as a living being, as a living community, to really come into that space where we can all benefit and no one is left out, truly. You know, everybody has the equality in the sense, you know, that they can fulfill the, whatever inspirations that God gave to them, you know, to fulfill on this earth. The family unit really has to make sure that they're strong enough to not be susceptible to all the fear and the lies of what this and cultural indoctrination is happening these days, you know, specifically upon women. I've seen, it's incredible, and I've experienced it. And I'm not, like, you know, putting women on the spot, but I'm just saying that women specifically have a very powerful role in the family. And, you know, I think of it as them being the circle. You know, they have to carry the space and the energy and that peace and love in order to allow that family unit to grow in its prosperity. But if the women are encapsulated with fear, anger, judgment, feeling like something is done wrong to them, you know, that shouldn't be done, then we've, you know, we lost power. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that I've seen is that the family is completely under attack, you know, not only mm-hmm. in the outer world of the public, but also within the law world. And it's on purpose. And it's because it's our choosing. So are we going to be a part of the family unit and the life, you know, the creation aspect that comes with the family, or are we going to be a part of the world of the death? And like you were saying, it's not really like negative. It's just a choice. And your choice is not going to affect, you know, mine and Janessa's choices, because we know how, you know, quantum physics works. Our energy is going to keep continuing to align and create our world. So I know, Janessa, because you exist and because I exist, that this world will be better, you know, that we will truly ascend and truly receive back everything that belongs to us as a human being and back to our true creator, you know. And if other people want to choose to not to be continue to feign ignorance or be ignorant or just to, you know, to be angry about everything and not to humble themselves, you know, that's their choice. And I send them much love. But I just know that, you know, it's either one or the other. And your choices will not decide somebody else's choices, because you're definitely not in a democracy.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially in speaking from experience of what you're talking about, I agree with you. And in addition to the attacks on the family or the using of family as leverage for decisions being made within the system, which drives a wedge within the family, that is very real. That is being used extensively. And then also the amount of shame that comes from the way the systems are structured. You really value and benefit from having metaphysical tools at your disposal to work through and process the emotions and the energies that come with being involved in one of the systems, especially for a length of time. And while many of us would look at me and easily say, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about and I can understand your point of view, we're also like, it's all of us, because are you paying taxes? do you have a mortgage? You know, these are credit card. These are all things and contracts and ways in which you also are involved in those systems. And you might not, because it's been such a way of life for you, you might not even be aware of the way that alters your family or the shame that it creates or the fear that it creates, or I mean, the fear that locks you into continuing to take loans or have a credit card, et cetera. So all of that is so very real. And I just really wanted to bring that into a very tangible daily lifestyle reality for all of us, because it is truly a way of life as it's been set up in the world around us until we start removing ourselves and uncontracting from that way of living and live a different lifestyle.
Yeah, totally. It's about, these days it's about convenience, and that is our biggest enemy, is convenience. Even if, you know,
I had that question, so you read my mind. So I love that you brought that up. Convenience is, it's so deceiving. Convenience is a way that they leverage us to the things that they want us to believe is benefiting us. But the only benefit mm-hmm. is actually the convenience, and everything else is losing our rights.
Yeah, totally.
Actually not losing them, but giving them up willingly.
Totally, yeah, and losing them. Like I saw the other day, and I was so surprised to actually see it, somebody paying with their wrists, you know, for some,
wow.
you know, coffee. And it's hard to say that it didn't freak me out because it did, you know, and I had to go process my own stuff, you know, recognizing that I just witnessed that, but also recognizing that, you know, I'm with Source, so, you know, everything's going to be okay. But I think a big thing is, as soon as people go into that world where they start to form with the mechanical world, then that's exactly when they start losing their living rights, you know, as what's been given to you when you were brought to this earth.
So we have about four more minutes here as we move to the top of the hour, and I really want you to share with the audience more information about your course, your approach to teaching, what they'll find if they dive into that course. So give us the goods. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I don't like, I try to be, I'm just going to say this up front. I'm a little vague when it comes to this topic because, again, I'm not interested in causing harm to the public, and I'm completely at peace with the public. I'm just here gathering the souls that can hear, you know, have the ability to see and to hear, to walk out of Babylon and to come back into, you know, who you truly are. So we cover equity, basically who, what, when, where, and why. We cover the process of honoring contracts and debts, you know, that consists of all the things that Janessa had spoke about. Our teaching style is that we really like to try to make it always accessible, you know, for life. So it's an online self-paced course, and the main teacher is there, and we do every now and then we do Monday night calls, which allows us to answer any questions that the students may have. We go over on what to do in court and how to process those contracts and how to basically operate completely in the peace when dealing with any form of public matter. And what I really like about the course in equity is it really sets up the stage for people to understand how to be fully, not only how to know how to do accounting according to what the law requires, but also how to prep your mind for what it is that could come next after that, which is pretty profound if you think about what freedom really means, you know, and what you know, true abundance truly means. So we're definitely building a community of like-minded special people who have the self-responsibility, the desire to learn and to lead because, you know, if I weren't here, say something happens to me tomorrow, we want to ensure that people would still be able to access information because this is truly a remedy that allows people to receive the peace they need from any of those kinds of obligations that are going on. It's just a matter of faith as well. So I've noticed that in previous talks that I've done, you know, students have told me that they send those talks off to their friends and they are so confused they can't hear me. You know, they think I'm all over the place, you know, which is understandable. But it's really a testament to about, this is about a frequency. You know, I completely operate on a frequency. So I know that the people that I'm attracting into the course, that we are attracting into the course, are going to be people like Janessa, you know, people who are really, truly interested in, you know, becoming their full actualized self and taking full responsibility into changing the things, the current status quo that we have. Access, if you want to email AMR, so that's Apple Marie Rebecca, AMR Peace, PEACE, at protonmail.com. And then put it into the topic session, the subject section that Eyes Wide Open sent me, so that we can understand where you receive the information from. It helps us to keep organized. That's how you can get a hold of me and us for more information. We'll send you more of that.
Yes, and if you didn't get that down, you'll be able to find it tomorrow on my website at www.fiercelyradiant.school under the Eyes Wide Open tab. Thank you so much for being here, Rebecca. Thank you for sharing your knowledge, your inspiration, and your peace to help have this wave of harmony move through the world. I love it, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you, Janessa, for being such a great space holder and doing what it is that you're doing. You surprised me from the moment that I met you. Thank you so much for everything that you are and you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, listeners, I invite you, if you would like to jump on a call with me and chat about how I can support you in turning your trial into triumph or your setback into success, you can book that call on my website, www.fiercelyradiant.tool. Scroll all the way down to the homepage, and you can snag your time. I look forward to talking to you soon. Next week, SJ will be back with me here on Wednesday at 5 p.m., and we're going to talk about how we can consciously approach conflict to create connection. And until then, friends, keep your eyes wide open.
Beautiful.
You're listening to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained since January 1997. We began our 25th year in broadcasting in January 2022, and we're just getting started, exploring the edge of human consciousness and possibility on planet Earth with founder and journalist Nicole Marie Whitney at the helm. What's really real and what's really possible? That is what we want to know. Join us at newsforthesoul.com. Newsforthesoul.com.